good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, a distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this May 11th pandemic, coronavirus pandemic edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's right. The YC Radio, the New York College community, is tuning in. In fact, I've gotten some messages from them indicating that they're tuning in, even as they're doing classes online and all those things. Well, first and foremost, backing up our studio producer's message, yes, we want to continue to build community. I always start these programs in these difficult days by saying, let's take care of each other. It's an opportunity for shared values, a sense that what is affecting you is affecting me. What is affecting me is affecting you. There's really no hiding place here. This is really not about a narrow definition of freedom or a narrow definition of the right to assemble or not to assemble, to speak or not to speak. This is an era in which we all need to pull together in a relationship to caring for each other, particularly for those who are the least among us, the most marginalized, and also our elders. Certainly in the African community, the notion of reverence for elders hopefully still abides, and it should be for the entirety of the society. All those elders who are in those nursing homes and at home and whatever, we are trying to keep them safe, and your behavior could endanger them. So it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about all of us in terms of those conditions that we're speaking of. So let's do take care of each other. Now, this is the Premium Drive edition of Vantage Point, so I just want to let you be aware of what we're doing today. It's called, our premium for today is a book, which is entitled Understanding Mass Incarceration. It's $50, and it's really, I'm doing this sort of thematically. Last week, it was about policing the black man, and God knows, is that relevant and pertinent still? Well, anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit better later when we get on the soapbox. But now, this week, last week, policing the black man. This week, Understanding Mass Incarceration. That's a $50 premium. It's a book. Now, once again, what I have done is put my $50 on the line, and I'm asking people to please match my $50. I started it off with a $200 contribution, which I'm spreading over these 4 weeks. Maybe next week I'll do $100. I'm not sure, but this week it's $50. And the premium, again, is Understanding Mass Incarceration. I'll give you a fuller description of it later, but this is a must-have tool for your information kit. Knowledge is power. We want to use that power to transform this society. Additionally, those excellent masks, they're protective, WBAI masks, the free speech masks, are beautiful, and they're protective. It's not just the aesthetics, they're functional, and they're $35. So for $85, you can get the book and a mask. And some people did that last week, and we really appreciate you doing that. Others may not be able to do that, so therefore we'll be pushing hard on mass incarceration. In fact, you know, people can start calling right now, even as we get to our guests, 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. You can start to call now. And it is urgently needed among those of us who can. We're not rich. The people who listen to WBAI largely are not the 1%. And if there are some in the 1%, that's great. You know, cut a big check. But we are really, in some measures, privileged. I'm not a wealthy person. But I, you know, have a little bit in my 501, whatever those things are. Got the Social Security, got the, you know, my little TIA CREF stuff under lock. And so I got a little bit, and I want to give that little bit. I can afford to give that little bit to support WBAI and other nonprofit causes. So for those of you who can, call 516-620-3602 in order to help WBAI not only survive but thrive. We urgently need WBAI in this moment of grave crisis, not only in terms of the coronavirus pandemic. It is a grave crisis in terms of the heart and soul of this country. This is one of the most dire moments in the history of this country, but it is also a moment for great opportunity to fight for transformative change. I'll talk about that more when we mount the soapbox later on. Well, today we are going to be talking about the census, what's at stake for people of African descent. That's right, the census. Yeah, you got to fill that out. What's at stake for people of African descent? I'm delighted to be joined in this conversation by the executive director of BAJI, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. She has done work all over the country, Ashley, and much of the world for that matter. Her name is Nana, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Gyamfi. If not, she will correct me momentarily. Nana, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you so very much. So pleased to be joining you. It's Jumpy.
Jumpy. Okay.
Nana Jumpy.
Jumpy. Okay. I knew I wouldn't get it right, but I got it now. Nana Jumpy. Well, Nana, let's begin this conversation. And I'm so delighted to have you be on the show. I'm familiar with BAJI for many, many years, and we share a number of comrades in terms of our base of friends and activists and organizers. But let's start with you as we begin this conversation, because I always like people to know who people are. So would you be so kind as to just give us a little background? Like, you know, you've been all over lots of different places, but where were you born? What are some of your influences? Those kind of things.
Yes, thank you. No problem. I was born in the United States. I'm an ABG, as I describe myself, an American-born Ghanaian, but just like a Toyota made in Kansas, you know, still Ghanaian. And right. I've lived here. I've lived in Cote d'Ivoire, right next to Ghana for some time, lived in Ghana for some time, you know, visit back and forth, and have had the fortunate situation of being able to visit and be with Black folks all over the world. I am an attorney, a movement attorney. I am a member of the National Conference of Black Lawyers. The first attorney that I ever saw really in court was while I was in law school, or just had gotten out of law school, right after the rebellion here in L.A. in 1992, and that was the esteemed Baba Chokwe Lumumba.
Ah, yes.
Showed me what it means to be an attorney in court, dashiki and all, as well as folks out here in Los Angeles like the now deceased Iris Johnson Bright and Kwaku Duren and my friend James Simmons and others. I have been doing a lot of work, and some of how we're connected is through our comrades that are doing work with the BLMLA, Black Lives Matter Los Angeles. I represented everyone that was arrested in the movement work that they were engaged in between 2014 and 2016 in court. At one point, I had like 10 cases and 9 clients all happening at the same time.
Right.
I also am a former professor in the Pan-African Studies Department at Cal State University, Los Angeles. I have a radio show myself, Conversations on the Way, the Asafo edition, which airs sometimes on KPFK Pacifica in Los Angeles. And I am also have co-founded and co-created with others two organizations, Human Rights Advocacy and Justice Warriors for Black Lives.
Right. Now, my key question is, that's an impressive resume. How did you become an activist, and who and what were the influences that propelled you in this direction?
I would say that my first influence was my father. Really, he was like the one that instilled us with fundamental Black nationalism. He came to the United States from Ghana in 1966, was there during the time of Ghana independence, of course, and there when President Nkrumah was president, saw all of these folks from all over the world, including Malcolm and Martin Luther King and Maya Angelou. I mean, just all these people come in, Louis Armstrong, that were African-American, as well as folks from the Caribbean and from Europe. And I think that that really solidified in his mind this pan-African way of looking at the world in just a real practical, down-to-earth way. And so when he came to the United States, he went to Berkeley. This is in 1966. So, you know, he was there during the time that the Panther Party started and, again, could really see the connection between what was happening here with black folks and what was happening under colonialism and neocolonialism on the continent and, you know, wherever black people are around the globe. And so he was the first influence. I mean, he's the one that taught us, like, we root for the black coach, we root for the black player. We're rooting for everybody black. You know,
yeah, basic blackness.
Yeah. The basic blackness, exactly. Right. And, you know, and the political reasons, right, the liberatory reasons that we do that. And so he, I would say, would be my first influence. I think I went to Cornell University. I stayed at Ujamaa Residential College. I count as one of my mentors, of course, the great Dr. James Turner.
And he's one of my best friends, by the way.
Oh, lovely.
I taught at Cornell.
We literally have a thing. Turner taught me. You know what I mean? You cannot have been someone that was a student of his and had any sense in your head and not understood that you were dealing with genius love and commitment and dedication and that you needed to get some of that, you know, and put yourself on that road. And so he was one of my greatest influences, as well as my comrades at Ujamaa. You know, all of those folks, Joe Scantlebury at the time was our RA.
You must have known Ken Glover, probably.
Oh, my gosh. Ken G. Glover? Of course.
Yes. See, that's why these conversations are important. See, you have a conversation, and then you know, I spoke at Ujamaa many times. I taught at Cornell in the Africana Studies and Resource Center. Dr. James Turner is one of my closest friends and comrades, and you're absolutely right. His contribution is immeasurable, and it is so good to know that that was one of your influences. So, wow, we got that out. Now let's roll into the next conversation. Let's talk about BAJI. In case our audience does not know, what is Black Alliance for Just Immigration? What is this vision? What is this mission?
So the Black Alliance for Just Immigration that I'm so pleased to be a part of is a national human rights, racial justice, and immigrant rights organization. We advocate, educate, organize on behalf of the 10 million black immigrants, refugees, and our families here in the United States. But we also work with multi-generational African Americans to fight for racial justice, to fight for social justice, and to fight for economic justice. We are headquartered in New York, right in the Republic of Brooklyn.
That's right.
But we also have offices in D.C., in Miami, in Atlanta, in Oakland, in where we started many, many years ago, in Los Angeles, and then we have staff members in Minneapolis and Houston. We're connected with many other organizations, black-led, both on the racial justice end and on the immigrant rights end. As you know, I know you know, one of our past executive director, Opal Tometi, was one of the big three that started the global Black Lives Matter movement. And so BAJI has always been one of the lead anchors of the movement for black lives. But we're also one of the few national organizations that are black-led that are, you know, speaking up on behalf of black people, including African-Americans, whenever we're at the table in these immigrant rights conversations.
Good. So now let's get right to the topic of the day, actually. I mean, I wanted to get that background out of the way. So the census is here. We do it it's done every 10 years. And so I guess the key question that needs to be driven home is, what is at stake for people of African descent? That is another way of saying, why should people of African descent fill out this form?
So there's when I think about and I look around, and I think when all of us look around at what is happening during this pandemic, we can see right in front of us. I'm like, this is like a tutorial on why it is important to be able to name and claim your resources, name and claim your political representation. And the census is completely connected to that. That's what it's about. You know, I want to just briefly remind all of us how the census came into being. The census came into being in this country was first being started at the Constitutional Convention, and they were trying to figure out how are the states going to be represented. And they decided it'll be represented based upon how many people you have. Well, that was a problem for the South, because the South had way more black people than they had white people in some areas, right, in some locations. And so they understood that they were going to lose out in comparison to the North. However, they also did not want to say, well, let's count the black people as people, because that would ruin their whole little program.
That's right.
So they decided that in the end, they agreed, all the states, at the that convention, that black people would be counted as three-fifths of a human being.
That's right.
Okay? And that's where that three-fifths compromise comes from that so many of us talk about, three-fifths being 60%. And I'm sad to say that the time of enslavement was probably the last time that black people were even counted as 60% of our population. Today, we have communities such as Brooklyn where black folks, I'm talking about African-American and black immigrant, when you combine us, we are not counting ourselves even 38%
of the
population. Yes, I mean, less than 50%, you know, almost just a little over a quarter. So as enslaved Africans, we were represented at a higher level, not represented in terms of our enfranchisement, right, but represented in terms of what the states were getting in terms of money, in terms of resources, and in terms of congressional districts. Well, we're not enslaved anymore, at least not in that way. And this is a space, the census, in which we actually can exercise some measure of power without voting, right? Doesn't matter if you can vote or not. Doesn't matter if you're voting, you know, if you've got restrictions on your voting. By counting, by saying, I am here, you help to designate how much money is going to go to the hospitals in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, in Harlem, in, you know, Watts, in Compton, in East Oakland. We get to decide that by letting ourselves be counted, or counting ourselves, really, in the census, because it's a self, we want a self-report. We don't want to wait till someone comes and knocks on our door and disturbs our peace. We want a self-report, which you can do by email, you can do, I mean, by internet, excuse me, you can do by phone, or you can even call in. And so we want to make sure that people understand that those resources come to us based upon our numbers. We also want to make sure folks understand one of the ways in which we keep getting these horrible basket of deplorable people to, that are representing us is because of how they're cutting and dividing up these districts. And we know, for example, in the state of New York, just as in the state of California, our failure to count ourselves can actually mean that we have less districts that represent our people. And so we will have reduced our political power by failing to make sure that we get counted. Mm-hmm. However you feel about political power, we know political power in the electoral sense is not liberation. But if these 4 years have not taught us anything, we better know that it can be further oppression and suppression, right? And it can be a shield for us to be able to protect our communities, and we know that it can be a sword for us to use to defend and fight on behalf of our communities. And so representation is important, resources are important, and the counting ourselves in the census allows us to get greater access to those things.
Now, I got to say, you actually have knocked me out of my chair, because I did not really know that the figures were that low. I mean, I knew they were low, but I didn't realize. And I know I was reading somewhere a presentation was made. Maybe it was Attorney Esmeralda Simmons, and the two of you will be joining us for the Pan-African Unity Dialogue, actually, this coming weekend. But I think there was some, there's some notion, there's a thing about how many millions or multi-millions of dollars are lost as per drop-off in the count. I knew that that was, like, drastic. That was scary enough. But let me ask you a different, another question. Well, first of all, let me just get this question out of the way. Because a lot of people are saying, well, that's the government, man. They spy on me. It's COINTELPRO. They're going to be all up in my stuff, all up in my business. I'm undocumented. I mean, so why should people not be afraid?
So this is one of my favorite questions, actually. People hate this question, but I love this question for a number of reasons. Firstly, most folks that are asking those types of questions, it's a good time for us to talk about how much we are already on the radar. Very few people are under the radar.
Anyway.
People have Facebook, they have Instagram, they have WhatsApp, they have, you know, especially in the immigrant community, we use WhatsApp, okay? We have WhatsApp, we have Twitter, just the social media alone, right? People have bank accounts, people have IDs, when you walk outside your door, all the ring things that people have on their door is recording you. If you look up, there's, you know, cameras everywhere. This is a state that we're already in. You don't even mean to. You say something and Google talk it back to you. I cannot find that. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're not even supposed to be on, right? So the reality is that we don't face any greater danger. We don't face any greater invasion of our privacy by filling out the census than we deal with every day, right. Number one. Number two, as Black people, immigrant or not, and citizen, no one is more prepared to deal with the dangers, the terror of white supremacy that could come from anything that we do than we are. Nobody. Nobody. We are the face of resistance, and we are the face of resilience in any battle that must be won for liberation in this country and beyond. And so I'm secure that we are ready, prepared, and able to deal with any issues that result from us trying to continue to access power, resources, and representation. And, you know, we know that that's par for the course. Our grandparents knew it, our great-grandparents knew it, and yet we always moved forward. And it's our generation, the generation beneath us, that need to continue to carry that mantle of moving forward in the face of whatever adversity may come our way.
But, however, there is the pledge that is put out that this is confidential. I mean, they say that. So whether or not we believe it or not, at least they make the claim that when you turn in this information, it is confidential. It would not be shared with anyone. Is that right?
That is correct. I mean, they are not, you know, the law makes it not on our, not to protect us, but to protect them. Remember, we're not the only people that don't want the government in our business. Okay?
Right.
There's plenty of white folks that don't want the government in their business either. And so the law, you know, is that this information cannot be shared. And, you know, but again, we are prepared as community, as organizations, if, you know, that were to happen.
Then my next question is, do you have any comparative data as to what the percentage of white people who actually sign up for the census is?
Well, right, they sign up for the census at least at the rate of 70%. Right now, I think
but
their
that,
rate
hold,
is
hold
about
it right there, right there, hold it right there. That is, uh-huh. I mean, I wanted to bring that out. I suspect that you had that information, but look at that gap between 30 or 35% and 70%. That is a huge gap in terms of the resources coming to communities that are predominantly white, and many of these are going to be rural communities. And by the way, we want everybody to get what's due them. But in this sense, as you put it, we're now positioning ourselves to be even much less than 3/5 of a human being in terms of power, resources, and representation.
Absolutely. And to add to that, Do you know where we are counted, whether we want to be counted or not? Prisons.
Yes.
Detention centers.
Isn't that something?
Which are in these rural areas where the white folks living in those areas are the prison guards and detention guards, and our numbers count for them. That's why when you go to those areas, they're out in the boondocks and they have gorgeous recreation centers. Their city hall and all those buildings are looking all nice and like that fake marbly look, all of that. That's on the heads of our black siblings and other siblings of color who are locked up in these prisons and locked up in these detention centers. Because you don't count at home,
push.
We count there.
Yeah, because I know there's been some push, and I sat at the table at the last go-round, as we were pushing to have people who were incarcerated actually be counted in the zip code where they live as opposed to the zip code
right.
where they're in prison. And I think New York was in the forefront of some of that. I don't know how it ultimately turned out, but there's been a lot of resistance to that, and understandably so. Well, Nana, let's go ahead. Finish up.
No, I'm saying it didn't go through because right as it was about to go through, the administration changed. This administration came in with 44 and a half, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, the orange man. So now, information. Baji, the Census Project, all the work that you're doing, if there are listeners out there who want to get further information, if they want to work with Baji, any of those kind of things, how do they do it?
So if you'd like to work with us on the census, we would sure appreciate it. Go to info@baji.org. That's info@baji.org, info@baji.org. We also have census materials that have been translated into Haitian Creole, into Amharic, into Somali, into Yoruba, into Wolof. And if there's any other languages, into Fulani, if there's other languages that folks would like, please also go to info@baji.org. And, you know, let's see what we can work out because we're trying to get the information out to as many of our community members as possible. We have it in French. We're looking now at Portuguese for our Brazilian siblings, as well as our folks from Mozambique, Angola, Cabo Verde, São Tomé, and of course Spanish for all of our Afro-Latinx folks that are Spanish-speaking. And so go to info@baji.org. You can also find us on Twitter, @BajiTweet. You can find us on Instagram, @InstaBaji. And you can go to our our website at baji.org.
All right. Okay. Well, Nana, we so appreciate you spending time with us today, sharing information. I probably get off the phone later this afternoon and call Dr. James Turner and tell him that another one of his Turner folk is out there doing good work in the world. So it's really been
Thank
a pleasure
you.
Having you on the line today, and keep up the good work. And we look forward to virtually being with you in a couple of days. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so very much. Love you. Thank you. Love the show. Thank you so much.
All right. What a wonderful, wonderful piece of information. And I got to say, I mean, I was not aware in a place like Brooklyn that you're talking somewhere around 35%. That's a huge, huge number, folk. I mean, we are cooperating with our oppressors by the apathy, the lack of knowledge, the suspicion, and all of that, some of which is justified. But we cannot afford that kind of lack of engagement with the census. I mean, our communities are starving already, and we need to be able to sign up. I did it yesterday, Ashley, online. Took about 10 minutes, 10 questions. Wasn't that intrusive, Ashley. It's basic information. It didn't get all up in my business, all up in my stuff. Just basically who's in the household and birth and all that kind of stuff. It didn't even ask for your Social Security number, any of those kind of things, if I recall correctly. So, and the other word is they already know anyhow. It's out there. So let's not deceive ourselves. Unfortunately, we live, 1984 is upon us. Well, let's get quickly now to our pledge drive before we go up on the soapbox. Again, we really, 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 folks, to be able to get this kind of information, to keep WEAI alive, but not only live, alive, thriving, we really need your support. Our premium for today is a book which is entitled Understanding Mass Incarceration. Let me just read quickly one of the part of the description. We all know that orange is the new black and mass incarceration is the new Jim Crow. But how much do we actually know about the structure, goals, and impact of the criminal justice system? Understanding Mass Incarceration offers the first comprehensive overview of the incarceration apparatus put in place by the world's largest jailer, the United States of America. Drawing on a body of academic and professional work, Understanding Mass Incarceration describes in plain, and this is important, plain English, understandable English, the many competing theories of criminal justice, from rehabilitation to retribution, from restorative justice to justice investment. In a lively, accessible style, author James Kilgore illuminates the difference between prisons and jails, probation and parole, laying out key concepts and policies such as the war on drugs, broken windows, policing, three strikes you out sentencing, the prison to school pipeline, recidivism. All these things, privatization, are included in this incredible book. Yes, a book. Yeah. So we need to face a book, not just be on Facebook, to face a book. And we have a book that's for just $50. $50, you'll be able to get this premium. And I'm asking you to match my $50. I've already put $50 up as the host of Vantage Point. Encouraging people who can afford it, who are able to sacrifice, who are able to give a little bit more. And we will have to ask you to do this time and time again. So we are the listeners we've been waiting for. We are the listeners who we have to depend on in order to keep WBAI alive. So friends, please go to your phones now, 516-620-3602. Say, I'm willing to match the professor. I'm willing to match that $50 the professor's already put on the line. Because, on the table. Because without, with or without the premiums, I believe in WBAI. I believe in the information it shares. I know what it does in order to nourish us and to keep us strong, keep us moving forward. And I want to make sure that I can continue to listen and act on that which I hear, if I choose to. You may not choose to, but at least by contributing, you make sure that there may be others out there who will act on what they hear, who may be in, who can engage. And that's why I'm in this. I'm a radio activist. I'm not just here just because I enjoy doing the show, certainly. I enjoy doing interviews like the ones we just did and learning from them and sharing that information with you. Because ignorance is not bliss. It is catastrophic. Knowledge is power, and it's particularly powerful if we act on it. And that's what this is about. That's why I'm consciously picking these premiums. Last week, policing the black man. This week, looking at, I said, let me look through here and see what I can come up with. Understanding mass incarceration. I'm looking at maybe the end of series with what about, you know, about understanding a socialist society. I've got the premium already looked at. It's not that, but it's something about socialism. We need a good dose of socialism. There are people, no doubt, who are in this audience who are not socialists. Well, that's fine, but you need to at least understand what it is and to not be afraid of it. You may say, I don't choose to be a socialist. I choose to be something else, but at least understand the fundamental principles of it. I believe that more socialism is needed in these United States of America. There are already some elements of it that are here, contrary to what the orange man and all of these maniacs are saying. They want to stop it and block it because they know that it means the death knell of the 1% in terms of its ability to continue to extract and be parasitical in terms of resources in this society. We have to stop that. This is an opportunity to stop that. Go to your phones right now. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. And say, yes, I want to match the professor's pledge for $50. Give me the book, please. Sign me up for the book, please. Sign me up for Understanding Mass Incarceration. If you already have the book, or if you already understand thoroughly the system of mass incarceration, put it in your toolkit and pass it on to son, daughter, friend, family. Pass it on to someone else. Give it up to somebody so they will have the knowledge. We'll have this basic information at our disposal. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Now, those masks, if you go to give2wbai.org, give2wbai.org, and right on the front, immediately you see the masks come up. These are the WBAI, the masks that are designed for these protective masks, which we need right now. Everybody who is walking out in the public should have a mask on. I mean, this is what we see in the White House. It's just such an abomination, such arrogance, such resistance to science, such a blatant sense of we're going to open up the economy. And all, I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute. I mean, my God, I mean, how did we get here? I mean, it's like mind numbing. It's like we're living in a nightmare. I mean, a nightmare on steroids. I mean, one that is horrifying, terrifying beyond anything that we might imagine. Well, let me not even go to your phones. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. To get a mask as well. $35, just $35. And it is functional. It is aesthetically well done. Beautifully done, as are all of the paraphernalia, all of the products produced by WBI are so well done. And then you'll be able to walk out and people will see you're with WBAI and you support free speech radio, but you're supporting it from a protective posture. You have a mask on. A mask. Not because you don't want your face to be seen, because you don't want to harm anyone. What a great symbol and what a great image to be walking down the street if you have to be out, social distancing, but still being able for people to, even with 6 feet or more away, they can see that mask. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Please, 10 people at least 10 people. I mean, is that too much to ask for 10 people? 10 people to match my donation, 10 people to get the mask today, you know, and maybe some who will do a combination. I'm so thankful for the person who called last week, I think from Connecticut or somewhere, or Massachusetts, and said he was doing the combination. So if you can do the combination, please do that, brothers and sisters and friends. We need the support here at WBAI so we can continue to do this work. Now let me give you the number so you can go up and we can do the soapbox. I don't know what... I mean, there's so much to talk about on the soapbox today. And you better come off today, because next week we may not be able to do it, because there's another kind of programming going on. So this may be the last time. We may not be able to do it next week. So better go to your phones right now. Let me just tell you quickly what's on my mind. Obviously, the vigilante killing of Mr. Arbery. Brother Arbery brings back memories of Trayvon Martin and the vigilante Zimmerman. It just brings back that trauma all over again. The stereotype of the dangerous black man. The dangerous black man. That's why you have to have guns. That's why you have to have stand-alone. Because there are these dangerous black people. From the founding of this republic, there's been a fear of black people with guns, black people. I mean, this is danger. Well, I think there's a fear of retribution. We've not been a people to talk about retribution, but yet there's that fear. So every black man, and there are black women who are seen as dangerous. And imagine the attempt to smear him, to go at his reputation. Go to your phones right now, 212-209-2881, 212-209-2881, 212-209-2881. We're coming at it 30 seconds to a minute per person. This is our rapid response round. To smear him, to go at his reputation. Oh, he was a burglar. Well, there's no evidence that this is the same person. Or was Amadou Diallo, they were trying to find drugs on him. Because if you had drugs on him, that meant that this character was bad. Or Michael Brown, he was supposedly shoplifting. And so that meant, he was therefore expendable. Because he had a flawed character. BS. Even if he were a burglar, even if Amadou had drugs, and that's not the case at all. They did not deserve to die and be killed and be it's like a game show somebody mentioned. Somebody's filming it and they're running this person down with a so-called citizen's arrest and killing another black person caught on film. Had it not been caught on film, they would have gotten away with it. And they still may get away with it. Because the criminal justice system does not believe that black bodies matter. 212-209-2881. 212-209-2881. Just got about 10 minutes for you to get up on the soapbox. We probably can get about 8 callers in within that time. Go to your phones right now. 212-209-2881. Secondly, the essential workers sacrificing black and brown bodies for profit in these United States of America. Surprise, surprise, the meatpacking industry. And the orange man, get back to work. We have to keep the supply of meat coming and so forth. You go back. But the people who are dying, black and brown people in these meatpacking factories where nobody takes care. It's almost back to the back. I mean, it's like nothing has changed back in the day. You know, this is why government, that's right, government, the public space is so incredibly important. And it matters who's in office to regulate. Even if you don't believe in capitalism, it has to be regulated. And these folks know they want unbridled capitalism, profit at all costs. Opening up means sacrificing black bodies. Essential workers and families and communities all across this country, however, we are essential to a movement for change that must take place. We must see ourselves as being essential to the change that must be. Cannot take this lying down. Must be a part of the change that must become. 212-209-2881. And then finally, call me and let us know. Do you feel safe? Maybe some people do. But give us a call. Let us know. We only got about 8 minutes left now. 212-209-2881. Now back to the premium, since we have no callers on the line just yet. The phones are wide open for people to call and to be a part of this soapbox section. Hopefully that means everybody's on the pledge line who are pledging and purchasing the book, which is entitled Understanding Mass Incarceration. It is a $50 premium. It is a book loaded with information, loaded with information, loaded with information. That you actually should get. I've already made a pledge of $50. You can match that pledge, call and say, I am down. I want to support. I want to help. I want to be a part of the solution. So call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602 to get your book. But it's not about the book. It's about WBAI. And as coincidentally, you get an excellent book. And you match the professor's contribution of $50. Also, mask at $35. At least 10 callers. We want at least 10 people. And right now, we're lagging terribly. Come on, folks. Come on. Please, please, please call 516-620-3602. in order to get your book, the contribution, the premium. Again, it's Understanding Mass Incarceration and a mask for $35, either or both. 212-209-2881. Let's go to our it's not. It's 212-209-2877.
212-209-2877. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Oh, why did I do that? Anyway, I thought I had it wrong. So no wonder why nobody's calling. but you said we had a caller?
Not yet. Not yet.
Okay. Give it to me at 212-209-2877. All right, 212-209-2877. I miscommunicated. I'm looking from one sheet to another, and I miscommunicated. So I know usually people want to get on the soapbox. 212-209. All right, good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Hey, Professor. How are you? Good show.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm giving out false information. I'm going from one sheet to another, and I'm just being sheltered. At home sometimes can make you just a little numb. So anyway, what's up? What's up? What's on your mind today?
Well, I am a little worried. I'm a little nervous, and it's not about the COVID. It's about people not seeing what's coming and not doing anything about it to stop this. You know, this is a big brother takeover. I know most of us know it already, but I mean, we're not doing anything about it, and we're getting marched right into the Cuomo, shelters that we're going to be, following. Like Gestapo is going to be coming, knocking on doors, taking tests, mandatory tests, or putting something in your body with the test. This is crazy. We're giving up all our rights, and we're worried about a flu that's going to kill you. You're going to have no rights left anyway. You're going to be a zombie.
So your contention is that there's a mass conspiracy to kill folks with the vaccine or the tests.
Well, this whole thing was right from the beginning was to kill people and scare them into a vaccine. Yes, well, most certainly it's a man-made virus. Everybody knows that. Anybody has any intellect.
So your contention is that the previous vaccines for polio, measles, whooping cough, and all these have not worked.
Those are not corona. Those are not a corona disease. Vaccines do not work for corona, cold-like things, flus. We know that they don't work for those things. They do work for something like polio, but they gave that away. They're not giving this away, and it's not going to be effective. The flu shot is not effective. Neither will if you don't have a common cold shot. You cannot make a vaccine for these things. Anybody who thinks that, you better get their,
What's the solution, therefore, to just let it ride its course?
You don't see it's the mark of the beast? That Bill Gates is putting the mark of the beast on all of mankind?
So I'm just asking you a straightforward question. So you're saying don't sign up for any vaccines, don't take any, let this virus take its course.
I definitely don't take a vaccine for that.
What should we do, therefore?
If it's killing less than 1%, why would you do anything for it?
Okay, so that 1%, we can sacrifice them. Let them die, and that's an acceptable cost. Got your point. 212-209-2877. I apologize for giving out false information. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Okay. Hello.
Please turn your radio down, and you got 45 seconds now.
Okay. Hello.
You're on the air.
Okay, all right. It's 5/5. I'm a double buddy. And
great.
Wonderful. I want to make a comment on, a couple of things. I'm 5/5. Okay, let's be clear. We have that option. We can be one whole man. Never mind what they say. They're not respected anyway. The Constitution needs to be changed. Not changed. We need a new Constitution. So they understand that we're 5/5. We're not even getting to 60%. That's a joke. We have other options. We need to understand that we have those options. Number two, this virus, we need to compare data on people that was dying of natural causes, diseases, and other for like last year, 2019, and see how many actually died then. Compare that with how many is dying now. That'll tell you kind of how much of a pandemic we're in. And whether or not they want to shut the government down so they can do other things. Mm.
So why would they shut the government down? Give me one example of why they would shut the government down and lose, and even the people who are part of the 1%. All of these different institutions lose trillions of dollars to shut the government down. And by the way, you know, we know that there are natural diseases. We know that people have hypertension, they have heart disease, they have cancer, all these various things. People die from that, yes, and there are ways in which people attempt to treat that. But that's different. There's not a heart disease virus. There's not a diabetes virus. There's not a, you see what I'm saying? There's a difference.
We don't have a total number.
I'm making another point. Whether or not we know the total point or not, the question is, there's a difference between those diseases, which we need to deal with systemically with more health care and a health care for all, a whole bunch of things, than a disease, a virus that is spreading something. That's a different scenario. This is like apples and oranges, what you're talking about.
No, all of them are natural deaths,
you're talking about natural deaths, right? All right, so that's how, if you're talking with hypertension, if you're talking cancer, you're talking diabetes, these are diseases, right? They're diseases. They need to be treated. But there's not a diabetes virus.
No, what I'm saying is get what that number is so we can make a scientific analysis on how much you died last year as compared to what we're dying this year.
What would that mean in relationship to what we should do?
What it means is that at least we would then be talking common sense, because if we find that there's not that much of a difference, once you make that comparison, we get scientific and have an analysis on where we want to go with this.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, thanks so much. Appreciate it. No, I don't really get it, because that means that, therefore, if you found that the numbers were the same, that means, okay, we should just do nothing and let the people die. I mean, that's not what he's saying, but I'm very leery of these kind of theories. Look, let's close out. Apologize for not getting more people on the soapbox, but right now, let's make the soapbox the pledge. Please, hopefully, I hope those numbers are ringing. Please help us out by helping yourself and helping us. You are helping yourself continue to have these conversations. That 516-620-3602. The premium for today is $50. It is a book called Understanding Mass Incarceration. The professor has already put up $50 asking you to match that at least 10 people, and we are not even there yet. We're not there yet. Please, folks, in these final seconds, and even after the show goes off, 516-620-3602. Understanding Mass Incarceration, $50, a mass. Oh, it is such a powerful, functional mass. Preserve Free Speech Radio, WBAI, $35. Do both, $85, if you can afford to do so. If you can afford to do so. Well, brothers and sisters and friends, we appreciate you so much listening to here on Vantage Point. Let's keep it alive. Let's not only keep it alive, let's thrive. This is the professor signing off. We'll see you again here next week on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org.